Tigerland. Goes to the goal square. Lands it at the top of the 50. Oh, good float and an opportunity.
If you don't know what 20 years of frustration sounds like, just have a listen.
And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And here we are again.
Yeah, it's an emotionally difficult time of year. I was watching...
I think it's a very emotionally fragile time of year.
Yeah, I was watching the club's Road to Round 1 videos, which is essentially a series of fairly normal official club interviews, which including Trent Cotchin, who remains dynamic on the mic, no one's looking forward to Trent Cotchin's second career as a pro wrestler after AFL. Let's just put it that way.
Although you would perhaps suggest that a Jehovah's Witness is our most charismatic footballer, which is an unusual combination.
Good point. And yet still, I found the videos incredibly powerful, and I got goosebumps at the end of it, which goes to show just the power of the yellow and black and the power of round one.
Mm. I know, and I must say that of all the changes to the club, most of which we've talked about, some of which we haven't, but the changes to the colour of the jersey, I assume you're with me in a big double thumbs up.
Yeah, and as every other Richmond fan I've spoken to about it. In fact, it was one of those problems you didn't know you had until you realised...
No, that's a really good way of putting it.
And then you see it fixed and you go, yeah, that does look much better. And, you know, I think a lot of credit does have to go to Simon Wallace, who, if nothing else... No, well, he did a lot of good things, but he certainly popularised that cause.
Hmm. Worthy cause. Yeah, so we're about... 48 hours away from the game, and I'm not quite an emotional wreck yet, but I will be.
Yeah. I mean, I've just... I'll be overseas for the game, and I've just lined up my viewing. Actually, 48 hours ago, I just lined up how I'm going to watch it and my redundancy plan if Plan A falls through. I'm getting pretty anxious, but... having done a bit of research on Carlton for this pod, I'm a bit more confident. It is an interesting first 2 weeks. It's two games that we essentially, if we lose the first 2 weeks,
it won't be good. Although I'm like any Richmond supporter, I can take amusement in misdeeds and. Missteps of Collingwood and Carlton every single days of the week, and the Jordan De Goey incident's very much old school cluster in my book.
Yeah, that was an amusing one, and I do feel a bit sorry for him. Stupid young man does something dumb and gets torn apart by one media, but the whole lying about they're getting caught is it's always funny. Yeah. It's not your players.
Yeah, I bet when Nathan Buckley was in front of the media repeating the story on Monday, he was feeling pretty bad at that point.
Yep, but they've got a lot of injuries. We'll talk about Carlton in a sec, but pretty much we've got a lot of line in the first 2 weeks.
We do. Look, I just want to emotionally survive the first week.
Yep. First. I'm getting ahead of myself. Yep.
So we're what, 15-point favourites?
Yep, 14 or 15.
Is that... I think we were about 18-point favourites last year, and that turned out to be a pretty gripping, not in a good way kind of match. I mean, we won, but wasn't much fun in the process. So that type of game could well be in the offing.
Yeah, no, it was impressive last year. Last year, every other game in round one was exciting, free throwing and attacking, and we turned in. Two teams that finished at the bottom of the ladder turned into played a dire, unwatchable game, and then we backed that up with another unwatchable game against Collingwood. where we snatched defeat out of the jaws of victory in the process of playing.
I'd completely repressed memory of that one.
You probably definitely forgot. It was also a terrible game to watch aside from the outcome. So it was one of the things reflecting on the first 2 weeks of last year. It did make me reflect in amazement once again just how many supporters we have. If only we drafted and coached as well as our supporters.
Mostly supported.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway,
speaking of drafting and coaching, I mean, one of the great things about preseason is seeing new players and seeing how old players have improved. No, I think it's fair to say that the new players were more exciting than the improvement from the existing players.
Yeah, and that's a good way to put it. I mean, the sort of our best player of the on a points per year basis.
Nank.
Yeah, well, Nank, but it was actually Dusty. Yes, we'll get to him, Nick. So not a big surprise there. Our best and fairest winner was again great. We'll get to Nank, and you're right. Like sort of our existing players, a few people that we talked about who we would have hoped kicked on from last year or came back fit. Guys like Corey Ellis. We mentioned him in our last pod. We would have liked to have him had a good end to the JLT series. He didn't kick on. Markov was probably one that I think you in that category of the you just referred to.
Yeah, I was a tad disappointed. Look, the JLT games they're shorter than a normal game. You've got more players on the bench, so it's a pretty small sample to draw from, so you don't want to judge them too harshly, but it's also it's not unfair to ask for more. I think if you were looking for players who sort of stood out for their improvement the most for me, I would actually go for Mabi Ochoa, and with that, if you happen to be the type of compulsive obsessive person who's got draft camp records going back 15 years, you'd know that he's literally put on 10 kilos since he arrived at Richmond, and he looked pretty good.
So I had in the past regarded Choles, he played a preseason game last year and obviously played at the end of, played one game, sort of more regard that as more of an act of desperation than a sign of genuine talent, because who else is playing
Kim? His VFL form had been okay, and it had been more as a forward than a back in the first half of the year, but then he'd played some decent forward as a back later on, and I'd sort of wondered about both him and Callum Moore as key defenders, because neither were particularly accurate shots for goal as juniors, which is normally a precursor to a move to the back line, but he did look all right as a centre half forward.
Choll.
Mm.
I thought he looked like call me again in 3 years. I wasn't that excited by his play. As I said, I thought he got gifted games because there were so few.
I agree. He didn't particularly deserve a game last year, but yeah.
Let me finish. For the first time in the game, I thought. I was being polite about him in the past because it'd be unfair to judge a late rookie key position player. But actually, for the first time in the last JLT game, I thought there was something to get excited about.
He's still pretty raw, but he was much more around the football than he had been previously.
Well, he flashed genuine sort of, more than just a nice leap. There was a moment where there was a ball on the ground after a stoppage, and he grabbed it. He moved quicker than everyone else. He grabbed it and got the snapshot at goal, which he missed. But that was the single best thing I've seen him doing, and that was the moment where I go,
Other than the running behind he kicked in last year's preseason, that was pretty awesome too.
Last year's preseason, he did some We don't need to go through it, but he did some things where you just cannot have a guy playing AFL football doing them.
Oh, no, but in terms of a single highlight, then when he ran 60 metres near burning off two people and then missed the shot of goal, that was pretty exciting.
Anyway, so that was one of the big sort of reservations. I finally saw something that why the coaching staff have put a bit of faith in him, because obviously I'm sure he's done some of these things in practice before. Chol was one of the ones who was one of the big pleasant surprises for me out of the last game.
Well, if you look at the statistics from the JLT series as a whole, there are some reasons for cautious optimism. The last year's Richmond team was extremely turgid for the amount of football that it gave up, minus 10 in inside 50s a game, minus 11 in tackles, and this, despite being pretty much even for disposals for the JLT series, we were well ahead in inside 50s, and particularly ahead in marks inside 50. So, and I think part of the reason was that we were getting much better forward half pressure with the new mosquito beat fleet of Butler, Rioli, and Castagna and co.
Yeah, I mean, it was also a brave foray into not playing the most conservative, boring game in the AFL, which we did in the second half of the year. But I do think that makes it harder, the forward pressure harder. But we'll wait and see. Like, I agree with your point, and a lot of people have not made exactly the same point you have made, but talked about, which it was most evident in round one, but it was evident in all three games, that we did less horizontal 20-metre chip passes across the half-back flank, allowing the other team to man up. It's all very well. It's good. It looked promising. It looked more like normal football. To me, it is... We've done this before in pre-season. To me, is what happens in round three or four when the pressure's on. How do we react? What's the reaction to losing a few, or when someone does a few dumb turnovers and we get blown out the other way, which happens to all teams and will happen to our team, because we're not the GWS, we're not premiership favourites. We're going to lose some ugly games this year. Is do we keep playing football or do we play not to lose again? So I agree the game plan looked good, but I would have suspended judgment. If it looked bad, I would have suspended judgment. If we got blown out the back way a few times, I want to see it in the regular season.
I think a degree of scepticism is obviously warranted, but in terms of having recruited in Prestia, Caddy and Nankervis, you've got three guys for whom tackle pressure has been a feature of their career, and you've brought in Butler, Castagna, Rioli's already there, and they're all good pressure act players. Like, it's... You bring in that many guys who are good at something, it's going to have an impact on the team as a whole. Now, the flip side to that is that Rioli, Castagna and Butler all don't get the ball a lot. There's a definite trade-off there. So they do have to be fanatical in the pressure, and they do have to get on the scoreboard to justify the places. Otherwise, you're carrying three mid-sized players here, sort of the 10 to 12 disposals a game, which is not that easy to do with modern interchanges.
No, Dimmer did try playing three guys who regularly average less than 10 possessions a game in the back line for a while, so he's given it a crack.
Yeah, it's a little bit different in the...
I think forwards
rotate a lot more through the mids than backs do for whatever reason, so you do... Teams tend to only have one or two sort of specialist forwards who aren't taking rotations in midfield.
Oh, look, I thought it was a terrible idea. Doing that, as we debated when he used to do it, which fortunately can't right now because Morris isn't playing. I agree with you. I don't think he can play all three.
There was a magical season where Morris was 15 disposals a game and had one of the fewest amounts of goals kicked against him of any AFL small defender, but sadly that's a long time ago. One thought I had, look, the Vickery's absence is, for as frustrating as he was a reliable shot for goal and generated shots on goal in good places, which is going to be a loss. Although, to some extent, Josh Caddy's takes that role, which is a sentence I didn't expect to find myself saying.
Potentially. I agree. I think that you've got a sample size issue there, because he had a stinker in the last game.
He did, but his marks again, marks inside 50 are pretty consistent the last couple of years, and particularly last year with Geelong. So it's he hasn't just done it a game or two. He's been a reliable goal kicker. Not as many as Vickery. He's obviously a different type of player, but I think if you've got him, and I'm assuming Lloyd's best 22, then you've got a couple of one-on-one marking guys other than Jack or Griffiths.
The other person who played that role again a bit in the preseason was Vossi, who's a better than average mark for his size. They're looking for people who aren't necessarily 195 centimetres plus to fill that role, partly because, you know, there is no logical 195 centimetre plus player on our list who's ready to go right now. But it may work just as well. Plenty of teams get by.
Yeah.
The main thing is you need someone who wins the matchup.
Yeah, I'm okay with the current the three tall configuration. It'd be light in event of a injury, but it sort of gives you more depth around the ball, because it is
three tall. That was the third.
Oh well, Nan Curvis rotating. So you're rotating. You've got three talls, two forward, one on the ruck on a rotation.
Okay, it was just because last year we played four.
Yeah, sometimes. Sometimes in recent years we've been too tall, and the ball has the lack of pressure on the ball coming out of our forward 50 has been a problem. So I think, you know, you can't argue that they haven't tried to do something about it. It comes with risks with that as well, but, you know.
Well, actually, this is going, like, whether you play three or four tall so you can rotate to four, we went through this a few times, and you might recall in the 15 season, did a bit of analysis that Griffiths and Vickery play better when they're both not in the team. And then in the year we lost to North, we actually played quite a lot of good footy with them both playing. So you can make a case for both.
Mm.
And there was definitely one season where Griffiths played better when Vickery wasn't playing.
Mm. Oh, Griffiths. Another season where he comes to frustrate us.
Well, you know, there is a chance should Chole kick on and not just be more than a flashy player and actually, you know, play a dominant game as a forward in the VFL. You know, there is a scenario where Griffiths gets dropped for Chole this year.
Yeah, because he is much better when the ball, as you said, when the ball hits the ground in a forward half ruck contest, he's much more agile and able to recover quickly. And Griffiths has never been a big possession guy or has ever kicked that many goals. So he doesn't have to play that well to replace his production. And he's got some other strengths. But yeah, I think he's depth. And yeah. I'm tracking the key forwards in this year's draft as well.
I mean, and yeah, he's depth because it might not just be dropping. Griffiths can always get injured. So let's go to Nank, the person you mentioned at the start. So, you know, obviously everyone knows who he is because he's a fantasy football darling at the moment. There was in the, which, you know, great, but that's not worth anything. The interesting thing for me is, okay, so I think we're all established now that he's above average ruckman when the ball hits the ground. He's on a points per minute basis in fantasy. He's one of the best ruckmen. So
he's a worker.
Yeah. So I think that's a given now. So the question is, and we'll discover in the regular season, is are you going to lose games because is his ruck work just good enough, or is his ruck work is it going to cost you games because it's just against a really good ruckman he's going to get dominated? So I don't know the answer. We're going to see. And if you
he holds up okay against Jacobs. He did get jumped on by Ryder particularly early on, I thought, and I didn't have strong views either way against Grundy. I think, you know, look, we might not get to see Nick Nat this year, but Nick Nat's going to be a problem for him, as he is for most human beings. And Goldstein, I think, is probably going to be a bit too athletic, but I'm pretty comfortable about the rest of them. He's got a very nice sneaky little hand pass in close.
Yeah, he does.
That I quite enjoy.
I think it's actually the best thing. The best single thing he does is he is close in hands.
Well, and he cracks in with the tackles as well. I'm certainly a fan of that work.
Hammers a few people in marking contests. Like he is really going to be someone that you're going to know is around.
Yeah, and I think he's got a pretty big tank. And I think he does wear opponents down over the course of the day. It really is. It's really 2012. Ivan Marić.
Oh yeah. I was going to say. If you'd asked me that question, is his ruck work good enough with Ivy, I would have given you different answers at different times. When regular listeners of the show know that I love Ivy. I love Nank. The reason I'm cutting to the chase so much in the analysis of him is because I just went through all of this. Focusing on the positive, I actually think Nank is just slightly better than Ivy.
If you do look at the stats, 2012 Ivy was friggin' awesome.
No, I was just going to say better than Ivy round the ground. I remember
2012 Ivy was 15 disposals a game, which is he's never got above 13 since. But
was 2012 Carlton?
What do you mean?
Was that the year we lost to Carlton? Was that 2012 when we lost to Carlton, wasn't it?
No, it was the last year we didn't make the finals, but we went from a percentage of 86 the year before to 112, so it was actually our biggest single improvement. We only won three more games, but it was probably our biggest single improvement in the quality of our football, and yeah, it was Ivy's career year.
It was, but you know, again with the Steve Morris thing, you've got to take people over. If you have a lot more sample size of the game, you've got to take them on what they've shown over the whole time. And Ivy, on the average of the time he's been in Richmond jumper versus Nank, who's had three games, Nank's got some. I think Ivy might even be better around the ground. But Nank is, I think, in tight. Nank is a superb ruckman. But I was just going to say on his hit outs one percentage, which, you know, it's not a perfect stat, and you never see it published normally, but I was pleased that it was. He was fifth worst out of 18 ruckmen in the AFL, and sort of not it wasn't like there was a big gap between him. You know, he was sort of comfortably. He was a comfortable sort of C+ in his mark. So he's not terrible. Like if that's where he finishes at the end of year, you can probably live with that for a third round pick. By the way, the person who was absolute worst, and by a second worst was Daylight, was Caruso.
Yeah, and they're both interesting.
Would you guess who's the second worst?
In terms of percentage won.
Fairly famous. Premiership winner Ben McEnvoy.
Really? Oh, yeah, actually, I would have put him down. I was thinking Stephen Martin, who's another small, athletic guy. But,
Yeah, so it goes to show.
I mean, it's the strengths and weaknesses in terms of, you know, Hammer was top five in hitouts, but, you know, pretty poor in his contested possessions and clearance and tackle work. Actually, not bad on his contested marking last year. It feels like he was dropping them all the time, but he actually did take a few.
Yeah, but it's a funny stat, though, because you only need to take five and you're doing okay.
Yeah, but Nank's going to grind away. Look, someone whose stats, were good rather than great was Dion Prestia, but he did, and I think he is probably a tad underdone, but he did average 20 disposals a game in only two-thirds of a game of football over his two games of football. So I'm still pretty optimistic that we'll be getting a fair bit out of him this year.
I think he's underdone too. We gave up a lot to get him. He has to play better than you'd want his average play over the regular season to be better than what he had, but he is now fully fit. He missed some of the preseason and fully fit for Elliot. It's a good thing for Dion because, you know, he had off-season breast surgery, so I'm very much open-minded. He flashed some good things, needs to do more. But, yeah, good preseason. The one that I wanted to mention briefly was Cochin, who probably partly to do because he played forward a bit. Didn't sort of kill us in the possession stakes, but he just did. You sort of wonder with Cochran because, we've gone on this up and down of him being us thinking we've got the best player in the AFL, and then for whatever reason, the grind, he became more of a grinding player. He kicked the ball on the last JLT match where I went, it was just a beautiful pass, I think, to Dusty in the forward line, and I think it's memory brain, but I thought, wow, that's the kind of kick he used to do in 2011 and 2012 when I thought he was going to be all-world player. And I just thought maybe having a deeper mid, having Prestia and Caddy in the midfield is taking some of the pressure off and bringing back the Brownlow medal winning Cochin that we'd all love to see one more time.
Oh, look, nothing would make me happier than seeing 2012 Cochin come back. I think your point on depth is certainly there, because I think Caddy's Caddy, if you're bringing him as to sort of give the other guys a rest, that's pretty good. He wins a lot of contested ball. I mean, on one of the telecasts they questioned how big a tank he has to be able to sort of run full time in midfield, but I think that forward mid role really does suit him, and happy with his work.
Okay, now we should we can't go for too long. It's only a preview show, but
well, it's the and it's week one. We're not getting ahead of ourselves.
Oh, I'm very much behind myself on my season expectations. But you know, I'm suspending disbelief despite the sort of reading the season previews is a bit of a depressing exercise, but Richmond supporters are good at grinding through those. And just those are the great thing about the modern internet is you can actually just talk to intelligent people who know a lot about football, who think that Richmond are a top eight side just because they're all mad Richmond supporters. And you know, frankly, I've found enough of those that I've got my own little internet bubble.
You've got your bubble.
So tell me, how are you feeling? How are you breaking down, Carlton? How are you seeing the game?
Oh, look, I think we are deserved favourites. I am intensely jealous of Wietering. I think he's a young Alex Rance, and Lennon being picked ahead of Cripps causes me pain and anxiety. But their forward line just does not scare me at all. Like, you know, Matthew Wright leading goal kicker. Meh. Their rebuild still has some way to go, and they're still transitioning. Now, look, the worst case scenario is the older midfielders play well, and some of the younger guys play well, and the journeymen chip in. They've got a couple of good young players from GWS, but really, you know, we should win. We've got more firepower. I think we've got more depth in midfield and a more settled defence. But we're favourites, but not overwhelmingly so.
Yeah, look, I think so. The bottom line with Carlton is, and now they're talking about playing four or five sort of young debutants. So,
well, they're debutants to Carlton. There are a number of them of the ex sort of 21, 22 year old ex GWS players.
I think that they in one article they talked about playing quite a few teenagers. So if they do that, they're going to struggle to
win. I'd be up for that.
But the other thing is, whether they do that or not, we'll find out. But Cripps has had an interrupted preseason.
Yes, I've enjoyed that.
Was okay in the last GLT match, but you know he is the engine room and the potential. You know, had everything gone perfectly, the All-Australian on their team, and you know he in any story where they beat us, he would have been in the top three players on the ground. And you know, he might be, he's a great player, but I think it's pretty hard to do four quarters in the midfield with that kind of preseason. Can I ask you quickly, Nick, about selection? Selection will be next week, but I'm just sort of breaking it down. I don't want to go through the full, it's very hard to do selection listening to people because you don't have the names in front of you, but there's a few sort of obvious ones if you accept that guys like and I believe that Conker, Hooley, McIntosh are automatic selections. We know
McIntosh, I'm not certain.
Really?
McIntosh and Castagna are the two, that sort of the last two in the team for me.
I don't have Castagna in my team.
Yeah, well, that's those two, Lloyd, Hunt would be sort of the four, you know, the.
Markov or Hunt, which would you play?
I think Hunt will play. Markov still has to get better defensively, sadly, because I love his work offensively. But yeah, the prospectus highlighted some one-on-one issues, and I think that's better addressed in the VFL, which doesn't start for another 3 weeks, which is my annoyance.
That's desperately unhopeful. Lloyd, you would play Lloyd?
Yes, because he kicked 35 goals last year, but he didn't have a great pre-season. I think he's on a bit of notice with some of those younger guys.
And you go in with a shorter team?
Yeah.
You wouldn't be tempted to play Marek?
Nope. Shorter, quicker, more pressure.
Lennon?
Nope. I enjoyed the 7 month goals as much as anyone, and we are going to talk about Shire Bolton, and people should go away and have a look at those highlights from the VFL, but
yeah, he won't.
Not in for me.
I think Cad Stanger, I don't think plays. I really wish
he's in the 25.
Yeah, I don't think he plays though. I really wish Dimmel would play Oleg instead of Hunt for development, but I don't think he will.
All right. 48 hours. Good luck to everyone coping. Say goodbye to your loved ones. The emotional roller coaster about to commence again. I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
See you next time.